So let's head across the Atlantic now to Great Britain, home to generations of long-distance walkers, many of whom were also writers. The poet Wordsworth is said to have walked the equivalent of 10 miles a day every day for 50 years. Charles Dickens was famous for his nighttime walks across London, and now we can add another to the list of dedicated British walkers.
I began with one 10-day walk and ended up walking for a year. Time distorted. Some days I was scorched by sun, others battered by wind and snow. Some days the fog and mist closed the landscape. On others the air was clear and the vault of the sky so vast I could see to another age. I was wet and cold, dusty and sweaty, content and sad, welcomed and lonely. It was a year containing 45 days of walking 400 miles and boating another 100. I did count, but who really cares about the number of miles?
Jules Priddy is an environmental biologist who writes about endangered landscapes, rising sea levels, and unsustainable farming practices. But his most personal book is called The Luminous Coast. It's the story of the year he spent walking England's southeastern shoreline. Steve Paulson wanted to know more.
Jules, what's the east coast of England like?
Well, the coast has three sorts of landscape. One, cliffs, mudstone cliffs that are quite crumbly and prone to erosion, shingle and sand beaches, and then a lot of river walls and sea walls where the land is flat and there are marshes leading up to where the sea is. And then those have been protected by building up sea walls over about 1,000 years.
So some of these places you knew well and others were unfamiliar to you.
Very much so, yes. And indeed, even the familiar places where I'd grown up, is when you walk in the back door along the coast as opposed to coming in through roads or paths from on land, you see them quite differently. And there's something that you learn about a particular place by seeing it from a different angle. But of course, in the walking, which is quite a physical thing to do, you discover more things about yourself as well. I mean, a walking journey is a journey outwards as well as a reconnoiter inwards.
So what is it about walking that appeals to you so much?
I think it's something about being kind of, it's an expression of being close to the land, close to places that could have significance to us. It gives us the opportunity to see light and hear sounds and make observations that you wouldn't normally make, to establish memories because things happen. Sometimes you're very lonely. Sometimes you feel exalted by what you see. But I think it's primarily about getting close to the land and learning what you can from that. In our affluent societies where we tend to spend a lot of time kind of rather remote from natural places.
Now, you write that this year of walking changed you. Mm. How so?
Well, the first obvious change was a physical one, that having walked on the first long walk of 160 miles, I walked east and north, and so the sun was always off to my right-hand side. And when I got home, I realized that if I put my hand over my left eye, the right eye being the one closest to the sun, all the colors were bleached. They were all the reds and blues had bleached away, and the colors were oranges and reds and yellows, rather like old film in the
really,
days.
Your vision was bleached.
Vision had changed, yeah. The left eye was still saturated. Hmm. And this is something that happens, that our brains do become rewired according to the sorts of things we see and the experiences that we have. After a couple of weeks, it got back to normal. So in one sense, there was an instrumental effect of being outside in a particular kind of landscape where the light, of course, by the coast, the light comes from two directions. It comes from the sky and it bounces off the water and comes from another direction. So there's always a luminosity, hence the title of the book. There's always a different sense to the light and how it affects you. So that's at one level. At another level, it's really about the kind of creation of a story land around the coast, which I'll carry forever.
You talk about creating memory maps.
I like picking things up. So I carry stuff back. So if I find a bird's bone or a feather or a particular stone or an encrusted shell or something kind of unusual, I'll pick them up from a particular place, and I have several boxes, which I call memory boxes, that are full of sorts of things that I've picked up on my travels, and I know the story associated with each of them.
So what were some of your most memorable experiences during this year of walking?
Yeah, I think quite often there were little things that touch you in a particular way. I spent one day walking around the whole of a peninsula between Essex and Suffolk, and it's a 16-mile walk around about Easter time, and it snowed and it rained and it was sunny and it was cold and it was wet and it was hot. It was every type of weather on that day. And I didn't see a single other person whilst I was walking. The place was closed. And the night before I walked, I had read quite a famous essay by Annie Dillard, American writer, wonderful writer, fierce writer. And she wrote about meeting a weasel and looking a weasel in the eye. And it was this kind of eye-to-eye interaction. I'd read this the night before. I was walking along the seawall, and this was in my mind. It was just ticking along. I was with nobody else. And then running along the seawall towards me were two weasels. And they ran right up to my up to my feet, and they went up on their hind legs as they do. And I lay down on the ground and looked them in the eye. And they just kind of looked at me. And we just looked at each other for about a minute. And then they gambled off into the grass. They call them a gang of weasels if there's more than one. And there was something kind of touching about that. I'm sure that'll not happen again in my life. Hmm. You know, sometimes things happen that are kind of numinous. They absolutely, that's it. That's the happening that you can remember.
I guess the question is how deep that goes. I mean, obviously a wonderful experience, sort of momentary. You know, they were there 1 minute, gone the next. Does that stay with you?
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, I think what you get from that is a sense that you, through a bit of hard work sometimes, you need to get out onto the land in the broader sense, onto the coast here, to let things happen. I mean, it might be you see a particular big flock of geese flying in, 16,000 geese I watched one day flying across the marches. Or it might be just the light on the water or something kind of very small that becomes special. I think we have to be there to see them.
Well, I mean, you also have to be receptive. You have to be open to have those kinds of experiences, to even notice them.
Yes, you do. And that's why I couch this idea of walking as being a kind of way to understand ourselves. It's both the journey outwards as well as the journey inwards. And of course, what I'm trying to do is to then write about it in a way that's not a rather dreary plod about walking from one place to the next place, you know, but going from what I call earthland to storyland, that when you walk in from A to B. When you travel, you go from A to B. If you write from A to B, it's boring.
Can you tell me about one or two other especially memorable experiences?
One of the most memorable is on the South Essex coast. There's a large area of the sea that is revealed as flat sands at low tide. It's called the Maplin Sands. And on the Maplin Sands is an ancient wet road, it's called. And so in order to get to one of the islands up the coast, you have to walk half a kilometre out onto the sands, turn left and walk about 6 or 7 miles north, and then turn left again. And it was a deliberately made wet road with hazel wattles put down to stabilise it.
Now, is this dependent on the tide?
Yes, at high tide, it's under the water. And when the tide comes in, it's rushing mighty fast. So you have to really know what you're doing when you're out there. And the light is dramatic. Distant ships levitate in mirages of heat when it's in summer. In winter, it's cold and windy and full of birds. There's a drama about the landscape when you leave the land and put yourself at the mercy of the sea in that kind of way.
You must feel like you know the place where you live now much better than you used to.
Oh, definitely, yes. And I mean, one of the things I did early on was to buy lots of maps. And when you look at maps, even very high detail ones, you'll see that there are lots of empty places, empty quarters. And you think, well, what's going on there? Apparently nothing. Once I discovered, this is along the Thames shore at a place called Tilbury, a part of the beach is lined on the inside by an old Victorian tip, and the Victorian waste then migrates onto the beach through the action of the water.
Wait, the Victorian waste?
Well, from London, what happened was that in order to get the waste out of London, they put it on barges and travelled up into the dark marshes, think Great Expectations and Pip and Magwitch in the kind of smoky, misty marshes. Hmm. Well, they brought the rubbish and just dumped it on the marshes and then came back in again with their empty barges. So all the beach is covered with pieces of porcelain and bottles and ivory toothbrushes and all kinds of old Victorian waste.
Still there?
Still there, yep, still there.
So did you go trash picking then?
Yes, and there's a kind of edge to this, which is that in 1842, the government at the time signed off the Cemeteries Act in central London because all the cemeteries were full. And what that meant was that they disinterred skeletons from graveyards in central London and took them out and dumped them on the marshes at that time. And so actually this beach at Tilbury is covered with pieces of human bone. There's no sand on the beach. It's all made up of tiny pieces of brick and porcelain and tile and human remains as well. Wow. There's nothing there at all.
Talk about encountering history. Sort of this very visceral sense.
Exactly. And it's an encounter with yourself. It's an encounter with surprise. It's a recognition that something is, you've discovered something that yes, some people know about, but they haven't kind of made a point of it or written about it. And you can collect old Victorian bottles, you know, blue and brown and all sorts of medicine shapes and different kinds of things that some people like to collect. But as again, a couple of those went into my memory box.
Jules Preti's book about walking England's eastern edge is called The Luminous Coast. He talked with Steve Paulson. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, film critic Manola Dargis shares her favorite film of the year, and British comedian John Cleese tells stories from the Monty Python glory days. I'm Anne Strainchamps. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.